In this podcast, we're going to build our understanding of capacitors, a small little electrical component that you may see inside electronics. They're generally looks like little Smarties, orange Smarties, or they're typically little blue or even orange or sometimes silvery grey little cans, which are typical of circuits that you look at. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. Previously, we looked at how to build a capacitor, and I talked you through building a capacitor in a previous podcast. Don't worry if you haven't listened to that podcast. We're going to talk through that again. And in earlier podcasts, I began to describe electrical components just to get you used to the idea of what happens in an electrical circuit. But again, don't worry, we'll go through that. The aim of this is just to break things up into smaller components and make it easier to understand, but also give ideas to teachers on how you can communicate these essential ideas. And I suppose in the past, capacitors were essential for hobbyists who had to build computers and build circuits and diagnose things and understand things. And now they're really important because they're the basics of how we're going to power our homes and drive our cars. We're going to use capacitors. Bit of a show. A spoiler alert there, but that's what we're aiming for. So of course, you start off with something rather than grand and hard to access. You know, people don't have to think about buying a home, especially if you've got small kids. But if you talk about, oh, here we're building this a small cute circuit, here you just connect the battery to it, and you with these two transistors. We'll explain how they work. I think one resistor and one capacitor. It makes a sound, so you get the interest in by having a small project which is easily accessible. So you're not giving too much broad information, saturating their understanding about that particular component there. But in the process, you say, look, there are many varieties. And we went off and actually built a capacitor. Before we go through there, I'll just discuss or revise a few things that we've done so far. And that is build a resistor out of a little coil, a spring of nichrome wire. This is basic heater wire. It's a nickel and chromium, high resistivity. The chrome makes it so it doesn't rust or decay, the normal thing that chrome does. Interesting thing about chrome, before we go too far, is that the chrome itself doesn't actually resist oxidation. In fact, the chrome oxidizes rather well. At a certain concentration, the chrome migrates to the surface of the nichrome and forms a chrome oxide. So basically, stainless steel is steel with a chrome oxide layer, which is a clear see-through layer that makes up stainless steel. So that's a nichrome wire. Going back to the little nichrome wire resistor, it coils up under a small current. The heat increases, and nichrome wire is very heat. Its resistivity is very heat sensitive. So as it begins to heat up, there's a runaway heating, and heats up and turns on as a resistor. You can then blow it and reduce the resistance. And as you do that, you can see the current increase through it and the voltage decrease through it. You can create a steady state with it, with a blower onto it emphasize the idea that electricity is being produced into heat energy, and you're taking the heat energy away in resistors. Similarly with the transistors, I gave a description of solid state mechanics and stuff like that. Then I gave some practical things about how to recognize transistor diagrams, the emitter collector base. The arrow always been on the emitter side, and the arrow's always following the direction of current from positive to negative, and how you set up and how the transistors operate as a current amplifier. You put 10 microamp in, and that allows 10 milliamp out regardless of the voltage applied to it. So it's a constant voltage source, just giving those fundamental facts which people, when they talk about it, don't go over it. And then of course we have the capacitor, and the capacitor is something rather interesting. I sort of described a general introduction to capacitors and described how you can make a simple capacitor with a sheet of paper, a sheet of silver foil, paper and silver foil. Obviously, silver foil, when I say silver foil, this is the old Australian term for what you would probably call aluminium foil. And in that process, in building this very simple flat capacitor, the important thing is you're not generating a very big capacitor, but you are nonetheless making a capacitor and showing the fact that it's important that the two layers don't touch or it will short out. And in this particular one, when you charge it up, you'll notice that the aluminium foil is attracted to each other. And this is a fundamental thing before you go too far building this simple model. Now, you may not have the time or resources to go out and actually build something like that, but conceptually it's a good thing to actually build in your head. That's a flat piece of silver foil, a piece of paper, and on top of it another silver foil. This means that if you put positive charge, we're not going to go into this, positive charge on the bottom, connect the bottom up to the positive side of a battery, and put positive charge there, and on the top put negative charge, take the terminals away, the positive charge will and negative charge will be attracted to either side, and they'll be wanting to discharge or pull across the piece of paper. So your two pieces of silver foil will attach either side of your piece of paper. Something interesting to do. You may have to get a reasonable voltage to see an effect like this, but it is a noticeable effect. Then we've gone on, this is the background, we've gone on to making a reasonable capacitor which could be used in a circuit. And for this, we've employed two rolls of silver foil, 30 metres by 30 centimetres is something which is available in Australia, and it's a similar rolls of lunch wrap, braids of paper, and you make it a strated layer, and arrange the rolls to your left, roll one being insulator, roll two being silver foil, roll three being another insulator, roll four being silver foil, and you roll this cleverly and onto a mandrel, and tie it up nice and tight, stepping the start of the various layers, so that you have access to the roll number four, silver foil, on the inside of your roll. Connect it to a wire system. It's described, and you'll make yourself, by rolling this up, you'll make yourself a fairly decent capacitor. This is not an insignificant capacitor, and this is where we start at this point in time of saying that we have built this particular capacitor, and it's made of two sheets of silver foil or aluminium foil, completely rolled out. You've used the entire roll to produce a capacitor, and this is, I suppose, what people were limited to before industrialization, before we've actually got really thin aluminium and really thin plastic and started to muck around with it to make it a small compact component. Now, what I've done is I've decided, particularly listening to my pendular discussion that it's actually rather tricky to get people to imagine building something and then get them to imagine equations. So I thought where I can, I'll try and get the equations separate in a separate podcast. And indeed, this is the podcast and where we're going to actually consider what you've built and consider working out what the capacitance of what you have built. So the capacitance of something is measured in something called farads, and it's the amount of charge per volt that you can store in the component. So the electrical definition of capacitance is the charge coulomb over the volt. So if I have a battery rated at 1 volt, your capacitor is 1 farad, it will actually store 1 coulomb on it. Just again going through that, a coulomb, a volt is a coulomb per joule. A volt is a joule per coulomb. I keep on mucking that up. I don't know why that is. So a volt is the amount of energy per coulomb through. So it's actually the units of capacitance is C squared on J. Capacitance is basically a sort of a energy related to energy storage. So it's coulombs per joule. So coulomb squared per joule or coulombs per volt. It is possible with, first year physics to work out what is the electric field, the charge storing capacity of two parallel plates. And this involves a few constants and a bit of physics, and I've decided that I'll lose some more audience if I actually go through the physics some more. Every concept you explain, even if you explain it up to 95% of the audience, if you then explain 20 such concepts in a row without the feedback, you know, the eyes feedback, it's a very difficult task. We've basically got the geometry here, and we'll go back into it. Rather than describe the geometry and load up your cognitive load, you know that at least you have a capacitor. I'm not going to give the various dimensions of it, and obviously the dimensions and size of that capacitor determines the amount of capacitance. And is there a formula? Obviously, if you have a 60-meter roll, you will have a capacitor twice as much. Or there's a whole series of things. Say if you had very thick paper, it would be less capacitance. The science and common sense come together with the following formula. The capacitance is the area of capacitor divided by the distance. Wouldn't it be nice if it was that simple? Plus another factor, which is epsilon, or the I can't even pronounce it. I've never said it. I've only ever read it. The permissivity of the vacuum permissivity, and another factor to do with polarization. So it's basically the area of your capacitor divided by the distance times these two other factors. Now, it would be great if these factors were really big, but they're not. They're really, really small. The permissivity of vacuum is 1.8 by 10 to the minus 12. Let's call it 8 or... Oh, let's call it 9 by 10 to the minus 12. So that's 1... I'm just wondering if it's got units. I'll have to really think about it. Let's call that 9 by 10 to the minus 12, or 9 divided by a trillion. 9 by 10 to the minus 12. So 10 to the 12 is a trillion, a million million. 10 to the minus 12 is means divided by a million million. 9 divided by a million million. and the permisticity of the actual component. This is a factor which you can add for polarizability. Depends on the actual material. So you can get some really great materials around night, but your common old glass or anything else that you grab around the lab will have a permisticity of 2 to 3. I'm sorry for the pronunciation of it. It's just one of these things when you podcast off the top of your head and you realize, look, I have never had to say this to another living human being. No, I'm just thinking back, I've never had to say it to someone else. So we've got these factors here that we can work out what the capacitance is. And now, again, I'll just say, just type this into your browser. And it's important to leave a few spaces between it. But you, let's go through. We want to get the area. So it's 30 meters by 30 centimeters is the area of your electrode. That's your area. Now, 30 meters by 30 centimeters. Let's put that up at 30 centimeters is roughly a third of a meter. And so that's 10 meters squared. So doing all that rolling, it's only 10 meters squared, which is quite reasonable. That's the size of a small bathroom or toilet or something like that. 10 meters squared, it's not a laugher, but it's a reasonably big size. So 10 meters squared, you put the 10. Now, the thickness of paper, you can judge the thickness of paper by getting a ream of paper, measuring the number of centimeters up the ream and dividing it by typically 500. But in general, a good number to put in there is 50 micron or 50 by 10 to the minus 6. So you're dividing it by 50 by 10 to the minus 6. So it's area divided by distance. So reducing the distance, that's a really good thing to do. And then that's going to give you a nice big number. And now the killer number is multiplying that by 9 by 10 to the minus 12. So that's 9e minus 12 in your browser. There's also calculators. You can do it many ways. And then you multiply it by another factor of 2 and probably another factor of 2 in there, depending on how you've built your capacitor, because you've got the you're using the plate area twice, if that makes sense. You've got a electrode above and below, so it's a factor of 2, but just about by the geometry of it. I'm not sure whether that's really all that necessary. But when you put that all into your browser, and I'm not going to get you to do the mental gymnastics, and obviously I think it's bad podcasting to listen to me. In my head, I go, oh, and I'm seeing it, but it's really bad podcasting out there to see it. That gives you a storage of 2 by 10 to the minus 6, 2 millionths of a farad. And that's actually quite a big capacitor. That type of capacitor is the type of capacitor you use to kickstart possibly light bulbs. I don't know, the old neons needed a start, the neon or argon discharge tubes, so it's long tubes. I think we call them neon tubes. Yeah, fluorescence tubes is what we tend to have, a little capacitor like that. Microfarad capacitor is the stuff you often see them sitting on the back of starter motors. Little things. They're not as big as you've built them, but they're not insignificant. They're the size of a small lolly in general. don't eat them. A small liquid chewable sort. They have square packaging. In general, they're pretty ruggedized because they're out in the open or in industrial environments, and so these capacitors store the power to start things. They're sort of a local DC power supply to start up a light or a motor. That's what they're used for. That's what a capacitor is. It's a charge storing device. It's an electrostatic battery. It's one way of storing it. So we have capacitors. Now, what I've done is, I suppose I have tricked hopefully students into wanting to build a capacitor or interest in a capacitor, rather than actually getting them to memorize circuits, and if they can, they can't, and they've got the cognitive load, you've got a circuit in front of them, which is this small oscillator circuit which you're building. Of course, it's not in front of you, but it's hopefully you're up the level of being able to imagine these things. And then we've gone and actually built a small capacitor. The first one is a simple one, and you can see the effect of the plates being charged. It's definitely charged. Then we've gone on, we've said, how can we build a bigger one? We've built a big one by rolling up a roll of silver foil. You know, rather than cut a piece of silver foil, you use a whole roll. That has the advantage that when you're finished with it, you've got a useful, although it's quite, can be quite irritating, rolls that you can unroll at the end of it, so it's not so destructive. And you can actually use your capacitor to do things. You can actually store a bit of charge in it, or you have a resistor. It will take a while for the charge to go in and out for it, and you can see that the resistor will determine how quickly the charge goes in and out. So through this activity, you've introduced a broad range of people who are not necessarily up straight on the conceptual level. The hands-on people can understand basically what a capacitor does. And if you've got enterprising students, they'll start to say, and they know this formula, they'll say, well, what if we can do something, what increase the area by making the the size of a capacitor? We increase a greater area for the bulk by making things much thinner, and make the paper much thinner. Of course, as we make it thinner, the voltage reduces. And this brings us on to the point of the real secret point of this is the thing called a supercapacitor. Supercapacitors, people had these ideas in the 1950s, and the first thing they did is we're going to attack this in certain ways. I will just quickly go through it. They said, look, we can massively increase the area by the actual surface we use. If you use a plate with a very large surface area, we can really do it. If you can make the actual plate extremely crinkly. And so they can use activated charcoal, which has if you look at it under a microscope, is not flat, it's really curvy and bumpy. And we can reduce the area. And one of the things you can do is make the plate so thin, you can make the plate out of a single atom thickness of carbon. A graphene layer is one way. You can make it crinkly, and you can do something by basically spray painting the surface of the graphene with a insulator, and so the insulator becomes polarized, and then you put the two layers together, the actual gap is an atomic gap. So you can get the gap right down to an atomic gap, where you have the two layers of insulators touching each other and the capacitance is in there. And then you can dope it with some lithium and various elements to make it sort of a half battery, half capacitor. And you can make these super capacitors. And so what, for instance, if my big effort to produce a fairly large capacitor is 2 microfarads. So it's a typical capacitor I can go down to a store, a local electronics store, buy, and drum roll, it's the one that you can buy at the store, cost an arm and a leg, unnecessarily so. Oh, I think about $15, I sort of can remember that from a local supplier. You call it Tandy, I think, in the US. Here we call it JCar Electronics. They're called super capacitors or ultra capacitors, and they have a charge storing ability of 55 farads. So this is more than 20 million times greater than what you have been able to build with two rolls of silver foil using conventional stuff. And these are significant. So people are looking at the different storage. They definitely have enough storage. Well, the main thing a capacitor can do is because they're an electrostatic battery, they can discharge really quickly. They have a very high current. They're still a factor of 10 weight for weight, volume less than a lithium battery, yet they can basically survive and last forever. So they've got a whole series of things beginning to. Oh, this is interesting. Something which lasts forever. Oh, that's got a good payback time, depending on how you charge it, because it's just electrostatic. Lithium batteries, although they're chemicals, and chemicals involves atoms moving, and the atoms move to form these little electrical wire whiskers. They actually short themselves out. Dendrites is the, I think, Greek hair. They actually, your lithium battery in your Telstra Roadster is basically getting hairier as it drives along the place. Eventually, your lithium battery will run out, whereas the supercapacitors they just don't run out, and because they've got really no moving parts, and that is literally maybe an a well yeah just the electrons move, the atoms don't move. They have a long life cycle. However, in terms of the total energy they can store is a lot less. The power they can store is great. Now, what's happening is that around Australia at least, people are getting in and skipping the battery thing and whacking their solar cells with supercapacitors, and the what is it, the thing blocking it is software. There's economics, and so what they have is for your solar cells, you need to convert your solar cells to AC, but not AC to be stored in your supercapacitor. So all this complex stuff, everything has to be programmable, and there's these things with connection to the net and all this type of stuff. So they've solved all these problems, and you have people want to buy something that's got a payback time in 20 years, and you've only going to live at home for 5 years. So the entire battery pack and inverter is on wheels, and you wheel it up to your house, you plug it in, and then when you're leaving, you can wheel it away. Look, the important point here is that we've started off on rather a mundane circuit, and we have used this understanding of capacitors to wire people into the idea of supercapacitors. But if you try to explain to people, supercapacitors are great complementary power sources, so they go very well with things, super batteries like fuel cells. They're the things that where a fuel cell can actually store, keep your bus moving in traffic. A supercapacitor can break your bus and pick it up again. So for things like a bus, supercapacitor is ideal because the bus can slow down. It's like a big giant rubber band. In fact, the electrostatics is typically an electrostatic rubber band. So the bus can slow down, speed up, store the power for that type of stuff. But if you display that, you've got a whole lot of cognitive stuff going in. They've got buses, the experience of buses, and a whole lot of dynamics going in. Where you want sort of a clean description of what a capacitor is, and just by keeping it slow and grow it along with a quiet description of small circuits you're going to build, nothing too big. Then a small bit of understanding. You may not understand it, but then you will understand it if you get involved in a construction project. So some may not understand it in the first 5 minutes. By the time they've built it, the aha time can go in. So it's more in teaching the time. And then building the big capacitor, and so you get a real hands-on feeling for what distance and electrons is. That's built in long-term memory. If I can say, it's good if it's spread over several days, because understanding and working memory increases after they go home to bed and sleep for a while, or play some sport, or do some other activity, come back in. And then from that platform, from that understanding, you have people who were mostly general public, then now slightly expert. They know what are the edges that you can press to generate these great things called supercapacitors, and how supercapacitors work and store this much energy. Now know it's a storage device, and it means a lot more than actually going on the internet and doing a research project and producing something which is well expressed. It's got all the good literacy stuff. It's actually on the mechanics of sheer understanding. Of course, there's going to be something really satisfactory when they start to build and use some actual circuits in it. There's another level of understanding which will be up that way. This is Peter Hill Explains, talking about capacitors. There will be another program on capacitors, but thanks for listening. In the meantime, keep doing and teaching science.